So the answer is that in the case of Malkos, there it's written, in other words, if this wicked man deserves to be given Malkos, in other words, to be given Malkos, right, to be given the Shmeisim, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we see then that on that basis, what we learn, in other words, now, from one situation, namely the situation, for example, of Kores, let's say, that we've just discussed, or from the situation of murder, which is more appropriate over here, because, as I said, they're comparing the sentence which speaks about Ashehu Rosh HaMamus, right, which is in the case of murder, okay? And Pasuk over there says, for example, you're not allowed to take kofar, not allowed to take, you know, like a monetary, what shall we say, like a monetary atonement, you know, in the case of a person who commits murder. In other words, he deserves a death penalty, and this is what it has to be, okay? So, huh? Oh, yes. Boy, you have an iron memory.
He gathers all my words like
pearls. Right.
I'm synonymous with
remarkable.
Worthy shalom.
Yeah, right. This is Elias Ben Hukunis, who is Bor Sitchenu Abi Tipa, right? Never loses a drop.
Oh,
right. But on the other hand, if you remember the other comparison that we have, you know, sponge whose surface is a coal, right? Sponge who sponges in everything, you know. Which is not considered. It's a good memory, but on the other hand, you have to learn to be a little bit discerning.
Do you have to record all that?
No, we're finished. All right. So now we see that it applies to those people who deserve Malkos. But the point is, again, on the basis of logic, you don't give Malkos. But you notice on what basis they are giving punishments? They're giving punishments on the basis of the fact that what applies in one situation may possibly apply in another situation on the basis of what? On the basis of what we call a Gezeirah Shavah. Because what is a Gezeirah Shavah? You know, it's a word which is repeated in situation A and situation B, and therefore the presumption is that what is true in situation A is therefore also true in situation B.
The qualitative distinction that was always offered to us was that every single Gezeirah Shavah is Kabbalah Misina.
Yes, absolutely right.
Right.
In other words, it cannot come along and be Mechadish Yerun Gezeirah Shavah. I mean, this is on the basis of the fact that you had a teacher who already had the tradition that this was a Gezeirah Shavah. Absolutely right.
To say that a Gezeirah Shavah is a type of punishment, that's the fact that they're going to have a type of punishment.
Well, it would depend. Depend what situation we're talking about, okay? So you're trying to generalize, and I don't want to generalize right now. I'm just delineating over here. Yeah. All right, let me get invited. Okay? All right. Right. Now, Chayavei Golios. Okay? How do we know that those people who deserve Golos, Minayin, how do I know, again, what? That you cannot give out punishment simply on the basis of, you know, logic, but instead that you need psukim in order to do it. So the answer is, again, we have a Gezeirah Shavah. What is a Gezeirah Shavah? Gezeirah Shavah is, again, Asya Rotzeach Rotzeach. In this case, we're talking about voluntary murder, in other words, premeditated murder, versus unpremeditated murder. But in both cases, what does the Torah say in reference to it? Calls in each one of them, he calls a rotzeach, you see. So that, therefore, we have to assume as follows, that not only is ein onshin min adin, that you cannot inflict punishment on the basis of, logical inference, on the basis of a kal v'chomer or something like that, right? But there's another thing, and that is, how would it affect the whole business of Edom Tzomim? This is the question. How would it affect them? So the answer would be that logically, but this was already upgeschlocked, as we said earlier in Marcus, as we had in the first pages, but on the basis of logic, we would say as follows, right? That if a person, along came witnesses, and they said that this guy committed, let's say, involuntary murder, but he deserves galus as his punishment, right? And then they were proved to be Adam Zimmerman. Then what should be their punishment? Well, they should go into galus, right? Okay?
That's logic.
That's logic, right? Mm-hmm. With Malkos, that we know, that they do get Malkos, right? But with galus, we saw that already, that's not that simple, okay? Why isn't it that simple? Because of the fact that if he himself did not go into galus, so can you make them go into galus? So therefore, for that, we already have a substitute. What do you do?
Malkus,
give him Malkus. Let him have some punishment after all. They deserve it.
They're not consistent.
Right, right. But, I mean, you can see, I mean, that logic isn't always the answer to these things. Not always. That you have to have really
a proof text. System.
Yeah, you have to have proof text, and you have to have a tradition of how do they understand the text and so on. And this is why, you know, when it comes, I mean, we see over here, we have a text, and we have a Rashi, we have Tosfos, that will question the times, as we've already seen some of Rashi's own interpretations, right? And this is why we have a Rabbeinu Hananel on the bottom of the page over here, because he has his own understanding of what the situation is. And then you go to the back of the book, as my son Michael would say, the boys in the back of the book.
The boys in the back of the book,
you know. You'll find all kinds of commentaries, you know, the Al-Farsi and the Rosh and the Rif and the this and that and so on and so forth. And, you know, they all have a different understanding at times, you know, what the text is. If everybody had exactly the same understanding, it's one thing, but you don't.
But what conclusion do you come to is important?
Okay, it depends. You have to look to see what is the weight of the discussion. Where does it seem to point? And who are the authorities? Are these the authorities who are, shall we say, the more recognized ones, or are they, you know, those who are not so recognized?
You mean they're making reference to Gezeira Shavah?
Not just Gezeira Shavah. I'm talking about in general. And we have certain categories, as for example, they say that, you know, when it comes to decisions, Babaye and Rava, okay? Or Shmuel and Rav and Shmuel and so on. That in certain areas we follow, let's say, Rav, and in other areas we follow Shmuel. Why? Because one was considered a greater expert when it came to what we would call Isura. In other words, what are we permitted to do and what are we not permitted to do? Right? In other words, what's Isur, what's Isur Heter, as we would say, using another expression to mean the same thing. And the other one was more of an expert, for example, in, let's say, in Dino, in other words, in the laws that pertain to courts and court decisions and things like that, and so on and so forth. Okay? So the different areas, you see. And maybe this is the reason why, for example, when it comes to, you remember, no, we didn't learn this, and we haven't learned Sanhedrin, but I refer to it, okay. Refer to it in Sanhedrin. That, you know, when Rav was about to go to Eretz Yisrael, so they came to Rabbi Yehuda Anossi to find out, you know, what kind of smicha he could get, okay? So the answer is, you know, he asked the following question. He asked, for example, Yore. So he was given the answer, Yore. Yodin. So he said, Yodin. Yate b'choyres. So in one case he said somebody could be mate b'choyres, but in the other one he says, lo yate. In fact, in the case of Rav, he said, lo yate b'choyres. Why? Not because Rav was a terrible scholar, but because Rav was so expert that other people would come along and they wouldn't realize that Rav and his expertise would know the fine points which the average person would not understand. And so therefore they didn't give him this permission so that others should not make this mistaken decisions on that basis. So today, of course, the, you know, the regular smicha reads as Yore Yore,
Yore
and Yodin Yodin. Although originally it was question and answer, you see. But this is the way it reads today. Now, what is the difference between Yore Yore and Yodin Yodin? Of course, Yore Yore means that he can be a teacher of Horah, as we say. More Horah. In other words, he can give decisions as to is it kosher, is it trade, and what do you do on this situation, what do you do in another one. But what is the Yodin Yodin? That will raise a different story. Yodin Yodin means that you have the authorization to sit on a bezdin because you have become a qualified expert in all the nuances of Jewish law. What constitutes a bezdin, and who are who's ra'ui, you know, who's worthy of being a dayan, and what about the witnesses? Have you checked, for example, are they krovim or psulim, or something that will come across also, which I'll discuss in this place. So not as many rabbonim get the yodin yodin as get the yori yodin. All right. So getting back now to our text. All right. Tanya. So in connection with this, we have a Tosefta that they now quote. It says, Omer Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai, and there was a certain early authority by the name of Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai, and he said as follows, it says, Ere ben Echomo, he says, may I see, literally, the consolation of the Yerushalayim. This was a form of, oath-taking. Namely, God should help me that I should see Yerushalayim, restored. In other words, I hope by doing so, im lo harakti eid zomeim, if I had not ordered, that an eid zomeim, that one of these lying, judge witnesses should be put to death, la hotzi meliban shel tzedukim, in order to prove that the tzedukim were wrong. Shehoyu Omrim, who would say, Ein Hoedim Zomimim Ne'erogin Ad Sheyehoreg Hanodon. That, as we saw before in the Mishnah, that the Tzedukim said that the Edim Zomimim are not to be put to death unless the person whom they had testified against is also put to death. So Amalo Shemim and Shetach, who was also one of the early Tanoim, again, if he is already put to death by the court, then in that case you cannot punish them with the death penalty. Okay? But the Tzedukim had the principle that what? That if the person is condemned to death, then in that case that's when the Eidim Zomim get the death penalty. But if he's not condemned to death, then he doesn't get the death penalty. This is what they said. Whereas the Pasuk says, Kasher Zoma, which implies not was he put to death, but this is what they proposed to do, you see. This is the whole problem that we have over here. So he says, in order to prove that the Tzedukim were wrong, in order to show them a lesson, therefore I ordered this Eid Zomim to be put to death. Yep. So Amalo Shimon ben Shetach. So Shimon ben Shetach, who was the great authority of his generation, said to him, Rebbe Nechoma, he says, may I see the Yerushalayim, and may I see God's consolation given to us, im lo shafachta dam naki, surely that you shed innocent blood. Meaning what? Meaning that this Eid Zomim, whom you put to death, he did not deserve the death penalty. Now, why didn't he deserve the death penalty? So the answer is, Sharei Amru Chachomim, because our sages have said, Ein ho Eidim Zomimim Neherogim Achi Zomishnehem. Right? That Eidim Zomimim cannot be put to death unless both of them can be proved to be Eidim Zomimim. Which, of course, puts a different slant on this altogether. Because, why? Yehuda ben Tabai put to death Eid Zomim, and one, from the language here, he only put to death one Eid Zomim. And that, of course, is contrary to what we learn, because what do we normally learn? That you cannot have Eidus unless there are at least two Eidim who were there. Don't do anything. You cannot condemn anybody on the basis of one witness only. Okay? The only time there are certain situations where the testimony of one witness is considered valid.
It's if two people come separately.
Yeah.
One says, "I saw him kill the man on Thursday at Kadima."
Yeah.
And another man says, "I saw him kill the person on Thursday at Kadima."
Yeah.
But they come separately. They both give the same testimony. They both claim to be standing in the, or they both say, that "I was standing over here. He couldn't see me. I was standing over here. He couldn't see me." So there are two witnesses.
Yeah. Right. So we already learned. I mean,
if one of them, if one of them couldn't have been there because they said,
I mean, one is in the east and one is in the west.
We were talking about
where they claimed that they saw
something
people.
Else.
Yes.
One is disqualified.
If Joe is disqualified, because he was seen in Jerusalem and disqualified.
Correct.
The other, now we're left with one witness hasn't been disqualified.
So?
So.
It's not enough.
The one witness who has not been disqualified, we haven't got him proved as a Zomer.
That is correct.
The one witness who has been disqualified, because it was of his place.
His qualification may be challenged, and the judges may rule as to in the category of Adam Sosrim.
Right. We have to have it has to be Edus Mekuvenus, as we say. In other words, the testimony must be congruent one with another.
But if you could prove that one man was lying, and the other man was seeing it from a different side, and he saw the left side of the murder instead of the right side, and the right side of the murder is Zomay.
I understand.
And the left side isn't. I mean, left side hasn't proved to be
wrong. Okay, then in that particular case, you see that it's no good.
Okay.
It's simply contradictory testimony or something like that that would not be accepted. They cannot be considered Adam Zomermin.
Okay, but
unless,
it's separately, and you only validate one person's testimony.
And this was the thing, and this is why Shimon ben Shattach objected to what Yehuda ben Tabai did. Because Yehuda ben Tabai said, "I'm going to put to death an aid zomim."
I understand that.
Comes Shimon ben Shattach and he says, "Hey, you had no right to do that. Right to do it because the Mishnah said that we learned before, right? That they both have to be in a category where they can be declared aidim zomim. Both of them, okay? Yes?
What I'm saying is if two people were not in collusion, each of them separately decided they were going to get this guy killed, and one of them has been proved to be an AIDS only, the other one hasn't.
Yeah. But we cannot convict a person of death penalty on the basis of only one witness. We can't do it.
I'm not asking.
He's driving at something else. He's driving at something even more obscure.
Can you explain this?
I'm not exactly sure. I know you're driving at what I think you're driving at, and you're having a great deal of trouble enunciating.
Yeah.
I hesitate.
All right, okay, all right.
You can speak for yourself. Let you finish.
Okay, I'll try again. Sorry. If Abraham wants to frame David for a crime, and Michael also wants to frame David for a crime, they both got their own motives.
But you said
they're not in collusion. Abraham knows that murder was done, and Michael also knows that murder was done. Independently, they come to the court.
Yeah.
And Abraham says, "I saw David killing such and such."
Yeah.
And Michael says, "I saw David killing such and such."
Yeah.
Okay. And they interrogate both of them, and it's determined that Abraham is a witness, is his own man. Okay.
You're again telling me interrogated. I mean, somebody else comes
someone
and
else,
says.
Sorry, thank you.
Somebody else comes and says. So if there's only one, the first point
it has to be in one who hey ye said, but more complaint. I mean, it has to be two of them together.
May be impeached,
right.
But he would never be categorized.
Yeah.
As
right.
I think what he's trying to say. I think. Okay. I think what David is trying to say, Michael, is that he's establishing a case where a second group of witnesses would come and say that
if you're talking about a second group of witnesses
talking about
a different category, but that's not what David said.
Second group of witnesses, when Abraham was interrogated, it was determined that his testimony couldn't be true.
Right.
Why? Okay? For what reason?
Because there was a wall in between.
Right. Not because he was with another group of people in a different
group. No.
Okay, I dropped what I said.
Fine.
Okay, all right.
Now, but Michael hasn't been proved false.
Yeah, so.
Okay, but you don't have two witnesses to get this right. Okay. Nevertheless, this one guy, Abraham, independently of Michael, by coincidence doing the same thing as Michael, tried to have David executed.
So
isn't he one same own witness?
He wasn't. He's not even saying anybody said he went away. So why would you even think he's an Ezom? You said that he was found to be flawed. Nobody even said he went away. To be an Ezom, you have to some other witnesses have to come and say.
The language is imanu hayisem, which is plural.
Who is them?
Right.
That's the only thing.
Right. Otherwise, they're not Adam Zomimim.
Okay, so
they're not Adam Zomimim.
If by coincidence,
doesn't mean we accept their testimony individual.
Okay, so if
the court could reject the testimony.
Okay, so if we don't actually conspire, then there's no crime. Is that right? If I by myself tried to get him into trouble, because I hate him, and he also hates him, perhaps for the same reason, and we each independently go and testify that he did this murder, I'll give him aggravation.
Wait. I don't know what it is in Talmudic law, but conspiracy does not have to be a joint combination where the furtherance of all steps are done in concert. Conspiracy stems from one and only one act in combination. That's why you can have conspirators within 27 different cities, they're trying to overthrow the government. And if they have one act together, like they all, for example,
they all walk around singing a chorus of Alice's Restaurant.
Exactly. But if they attended one meeting, all right, and then they went off and they did everything else independently, they still can be brought in under the dragnet of conspiracy.
Okay, I'm not really interested in American law.
Yeah, what's your problem? Do you understand what Shimon ben Shadrach complained to?
Shimon ben Shadrach.
Yehud ben Tabbai said one. He executed one Edom.
Right.
That means that if you had a pair of Edom, one of the witnesses was challenged by new witnesses who came and said the formula. You were with us with reference to only one of the two witnesses, and therefore attempting and Yehud ben Tabbai categorized him as an Edom and had him executed. Shimon ben Shadrach came and said, "You cannot. There is no such animal as a single aid zomim."
Right,
that's what he's saying. Right.
Okay, now what's your problem?
He's trying to construct a situation.
What is
your problem? One valid aid
zomim. It don't work. You cannot have one aid zomim. All right.
I'm misunderstanding.
Okay.
I'm taking in everything.
Got to try to understand what it says first before you ask questions.
Right. Okay. All right. So, again, what did Shimon ben Shalom say? He says that you shed innocent blood. Why? Sha'arei Yomer Chachomim. Right? Because the sages said, Ein ho'edim zomim in erogim ha'shuzum esnerihem. Both of them. In other words, both witnesses have to be declared to be edim zomim. Right? V'yein lokin ha'shuzum esnerihem. Likewise, when it comes to Malkos, if, you know, they came and they said, you know, that this person committed an act for which the punishment was Malkos. So again, both of them, both witnesses, have to be able to be challenged on the basis of Imanu Hayisem, right, the more complaining. So you need two witnesses. So Miyad Kibul Olov Rabbi Yehud Ben Tabbai, She'ene Mora Haroa Eladaptation Ben Shadrach. So at this point, Yehud Ben Tabbai came to a decision that he would never again give a decision on Torah, which of course would involve, you know, these particular areas, unless he was actually in the presence of Shimon ben Shetach, because he sees that in these areas he really did not handle it correctly, he did not have the same expertise, and therefore he should be in the presence of Shimon ben Shetach, so that if he makes a mistake in his judgment, Shimon ben Shetach could immediately overrule him and prevent a miscarriage of justice.
Read the rest of it, it's very interesting.
Yeah. Okay, and then the rest of it tells that the Choyomov Shalyur Behuda ben Tabai, and as long as Rabbi Yehud ben Tabbai lived, you know, for various days, Hoya Mishtateach al Kivro Shalosei Ho'ed, he would prostrate himself on the kever, on the grave of that particular witness whom he had condemned to death, right? The Hoya Kodin Nishma, and people would hear his voice. And when people thought that this was actually the person who had been executed, whose voice they were hearing, Omar, so he said to them, Koli Shalihu, it is my voice. Teidu, you should know that Lemochor Humeis, that if on the following day, not it means he will die, but I will die. This is what it means. He's referring to himself in the third person. You should know that if tomorrow I die, then in Kolo Nishma, then you won't hear my voice anymore. So you know that it is my voice. So Omalei Rab Acha Bereit Rava, so Rab Acha, the son of Rava, said, the Rabashi, he says, Dilma Medina Kombahade. It says, but maybe the sound would stop if, you know, let's say, the Rebbeinu Shalom gave a final judgment and said it has to stop. Or, Inami Piyusi Piyesi. Maybe the Horug, you know, the person who had been executed, decided finally to accept the, you know, the prayers for forgiveness of the Yehuda ben Tabai, and he
decided. That's
why
you understood that phrase Teidu. You don't think I understood that always to mean Teidu Lamachu Humeis. You should know that the day after Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai died, Ein Kol Nishma, there was no more voices heard, and then Rav Acha Brei D'Rabbi Rashi offered two explanations, that either a judgment was issued that the voice
Well, it's a minor point, because I understand it the way some others understand it, okay? That the who is actually, he's referring to himself in the first.
Really?
He's using third person instead of the. But it could be the way, I mean, because the who obviously means he's still referring to Yehuda ben Tabai. He's not referring to the Horeb. The Horeb is already dead, you see. So there's no question about that. All right,
Doctor, can I just review the Iker, because I hope I'm getting this. The main principle here is that if a aid or two aid zolamim testify against someone, and that person is falsely executed, by inference of law, the aid zolamim are not put to death,
that
because they cannot be put to death by an inference drawn from a law. They can only be put to death if a court renders a pasak din that they should be put to death. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Absolutely.
The criminal, that the defendant.
Absolutely. They have.
There's a pasak din. I think you got to confuse. There's a pasak din that the defendant be executed.
Right. There's a pasak din for that.
Between the
point
in time
that
the defendant is executed.
Yeah.
Between the point of the pasak din and the execution, is there a window of opportunity to be executed?
Okay,
if
that's
they're
what
impeached
I
prior to the pasak din, they're not executed. If they're impeached after the execution, they're not executed.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Before I didn't.
Mike
I
is absolutely right.
I
what he
appreciate
says.
You cleared it up.
Right.
For me.
Right. Yeah.
Now, what is the reasoning for that? That if
the reasoning, as we said, I mean, because of the fact this is already the machlokes between the tzedukim and the Chachomim. And the Chachomim felt that Kasher Zomam Lasos LeYochiv means the man is still alive, the person whom they wanted to condemn. Harehu Kayom, remember we said that over there. So if that's the case, then this is, you know, a separate punishment, a special punishment that the Torah, has decreed for Edom Zomam.
Very interesting.
Yeah. But if the man has already been executed, then in that case, they cannot be executed as Edom Zomamim. Doesn't mean that they'll go off scot-free. I mean, they could get something. I mean, needless to say, the report will spread in the community that these two people, you know, they murdered a person falsely and so on. And, you know, they're liable to become pariahs in the community or whatever it may be. But from the point of view of the Beis Din cannot declare, you know, that these people have to be put to death as a result. So I said, you know, this is a gzeiras hakosef, unfortunately. I mean, it doesn't always agree with our own sense of logic. But this is what it is. Yeah. All right, let's do the new Mishnah and then we'll call it a night. Okay? Yes.
Arab and Achama as a formula.
Yeah.
That appears in other places.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Lots of other places, right.
They usually appear as a form of an oath. period after this is the correct. Korban HaBayis with a Nechama where I should not see the Nechama of the Korban, and yet here it's an anachronism.
It certainly is an anachronism in the sense that this is still in the days of Bayis Sheni, because we're talking about Yehuda ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shetach. Both of them, you know, were predecessors of Shmaya Natalion, and they were predecessors of Hillel and Shammai, you know, when you go through the first chapter of Ovos, you see, you know. You're absolutely right. But, on the other hand, it could also be true, you know, that Erev Nechama, meaning that there are other times when there was Tzoras even in the days of the second Beis HaMikdash, and they prayed also that there should be Nechama for the people of Israel and for Yerushalayim and for the Beis HaMikdash and everything.
Well, perhaps the alternate parish offered by Rashi might be related to that.
Yes, well, he says, Lo Ereb Nechama. He says it means I will not be able to see
the parish. That would normally be the understanding.
Gemara HaPokalibracha, yes.
Right, and then the parish Acha, Ereb Nechama, Nishba Yerusha Gona, Ereb Nechmasa.
Right.
So that, you know, the first part would refer to the standard situation, Ereb Korban HaBayis.
Right.
You shouldn't see
but the second one is really a very drastic thing, right? The second one is really very drastic where he says, what?
Another
one.
The second
Beis HaMikdash
was lacking a lot of the
Kalim
that they had in the first Beis
HaMikdash. Oh, right.
That's
true. Of course.
They wanted that back. And
There's no question. It was not restored. All right. Let's take a look at the new Mishnah, or at least start down, get down to the bottom of the page, and then we'll call it a night. Okay? All right. Now, we come again to this principle, David, of Alpi Shnayim Edim or Shlosha Edim Yumas HaMeis, right? Pasuk says that according to the testimony of two witnesses or three witnesses, the person who is to be condemned to death shall be condemned. So, im miskayem es ho'edus b'shnayim, if the testimony is valid, if you have two witnesses, so lomo parat hakosa b'shlosha, then why did the Torah also mention the little item about what? Three. So there must be a reason why the Torah mentions or three, right? So the lahakish shlosha l'shnayim, it's in order that we should compare three witnesses to two witnesses. In what way do we compare them? Ma shlosha mezimenes hashnayim, just as for example, three witnesses can come along and declare that the two witnesses who first gave testimony were Edim Zomimim. So af hashnayim, then even two witnesses, Yezomu Esagimu, can come along and say that the three witnesses who came before, you know, that they were Edim Zomabim. Umenayin Afilu Meyo, and how do we know that even if there were 100 sets of witnesses, and we had a set of witnesses who came along and say that all these 100 sets of witnesses were Edim Zomabim, how do we know that? Talmud Lomar, Edim. Meaning what? Meaning that the word, you know, Alpi Shnei Edim, or Alpi Shnayim Edim, or Shlosha Edim, right? In other words, why do we have to have the word Edim mentioned a second time? So the answer is that it refers to each and every single set of witnesses. Okay? Rabbi Shimon Omer. Rabbi Shimon said, Ma Shnayim Einon Neherogin Ashu Shneim Zomimin. He says that just as two witnesses cannot be put to death until both of them are declared to be Edim Zomimim. You hear that?
Yeah,
so Av Shloshenim Ne'erogim, so likewise, three witnesses cannot be put to death Achiyu Shloshton Zomimim until all three of them are declared to be Edim Zomimim. Okay? So in other words, this rules out what you said before about the 1-8. Because 1-8 can never be anything. It has to be 2, 3, and they all have to be declared to be Edim Zomimim. Umenayin afilu meyo, and how do we know that the same thing implies even if you had 100 sets of witnesses? So again, Talmud Lomar Edim. That's why the Torah repeats the word Edim. Rabbi Akiva has a somewhat different drash. He says, Rabbi Akiva Omer, he says, Loibo ashlishi lohokel. He says, you know what? The fact that it says three witnesses is not in order to make it easier as far as the judgment is concerned, but it's there rather to be more severe in the interpretation. In what way? In that the punishment of the third is going to be the same as the punishment of the two. I mean, we would say, okay, maybe, you know, the first two came along and so on. Why a third one? So he should escape? No. He gets the same. The Yim Cain, and here we have the moral teaching, if this is the case, says Rabbi Akiva, Onash HaKosel the Nitpol Yivri Avera Ki Yivri Avera. The Pasuk says, you know, the Pasuk punishes somebody who associates himself with those who are committing transgressions, and treats him exactly like one who is committing a transgression himself, right? So alachas kama v'chamot. So under the so much more so then yishalem sochol enitpal yosei mitzvah ki yosei mitzvah. Then the Torah wants to give reward to all those who are performing mitzvahs, even as, that is, the who, people who associate with them, themselves with those who perform mitzvahs, and give them the same reward as the people who,
as if they already also
so that they had actually performed the mitzvah themselves. All right? Well, we'll go down to the bottom of the page. All right. Umash Nayim, and just as in the case of two witnesses, again coming back to them, you know, two, three, and so on. Umash Nayim, if we had only two witnesses, and nim so echad mehem korov apostle, and if one of them was either a relative or was considered unworthy of being unfit, you know, to be a witness. Korov, of course, means if you're a blood relative or relative through marriage or something like that, you cannot testify against someone. And as a matter of fact, you cannot even be a witness together with another person. You cannot, okay?
Even through marriage?
Yeah, yeah. They go through a whole list. So you cannot be a korov. I mean, for example, if you have a chasna, right? Then the witnesses to the wedding, they're not allowed to be either korovim, right? And they should also not be psulim. What do we mean by psulim? By psulim we mean people who are, for example, the Gemara says, besachek, bekuvio, in other words, people who gamble all the time without having anything, you know, productive that they do. Or people who are known that they have a terrible reputation in the community, because even if they haven't been convicted, but nevertheless, you know, they already have a reputation as being liars and cheats and embezzlers and things like that. So, okay?
You don't want to have, right.
So, even if one of the witnesses is proved to be either a korov or apostle, so what happens? Edusam betela, then the entire testimony is of no effect. So avshlosha, so likewise three, nimsoecho nehem korov apostle, if one of them is korov apostle, right, either a relative or, not considered
unworthy
as a witness, so edusam betela, so their testimony is no good, right? I mean, we would say, okay, so if there are three witnesses, right, so we have two good ones and one bad one. So therefore, we should still accept the testimony of the two witnesses, the two good ones. So we say nothing doing, because they are giving testimony as if they are one, and that's it. So it's no good. If one of them is korov or apostle, then all three of them, the testimony is thrown out. And it says menayin apilu meyo. And how do we know, even if there were 100 who came to testify, that if one of them even was a korov or apostle, that we throw out the entire testimony? So Talmud Lomar Edom. This is why the Torah again repeats the word Edom, to show that no matter how many, if one is disqualified, then they're all disqualified. All right, we'll stop at this particular point. Next we continue from top of Omen Vav.
It's August 30th, 1995.
Yes. So next week we'll meet again after Mincha Marav. Mincha, I know, moves up either 5 or 10 minutes. I'd have to take a look. I think it moves up 10 minutes.
Doesn't matter.
So,
study
the first part of the Mishnah. And then we heard some bit over here.
September,
all right, then we'll
6, 1995.
Yeah. We're, yes.
Exactly,
we're now on the top of Dot Vav, where the Mishnah continues. Yeah.
okay.
We're on the top of the above, where we have the continuation of the Mishnah. Okay? All right. For those who don't remember what the Mishnah had to deal with, let me just summarize very briefly again. All right. The Torah said, Al pi shnayim edim or shlosh edim, yumas hameis. Right? That a person can only be put to death by virtue of the testimony of two or three witnesses. And so immediately the question that the Mishnah raised, if you remember, was, why does it have to say three witnesses? Obviously, if two witnesses it would be enough, right? So why do they say, right, the Mishkayem say this was time, Salom of Porat, and why did the Torah have to mention three? So the answer is, in order to compare three witnesses to two witnesses, in that, as we saw before, that if one of them is apostle or Korah, automatically that invalidates the testimony. Or if, let's say, they're going to be proved Edom Zomimim, then even if only two of them testified, but the third testified along with them, then automatically he too would be considered is equally guilty together with them. And then, of course, we had this very nice medrash that we had over there, you know, that...
yes.
Yeah.
We're talking strictly of witnesses for the prosecution now, not for the defense.
Could be in any case. Could be witnesses for the defense too. Yeah.
Yeah, but would all the witnesses be thrown out because if one was found?
This is a problem that we're going to face right now. We'll see that they carry the argument, if you wish, ad absurdum, you know.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, that's hard. Yeah.
You'll see in a second what I'm talking about. Okay.
Don't they agree in advance the prosecution with the defense about who is going to be the witnesses before they even start to
try the case?
Allow who's going to be the witness? You would know. Well, that's my impression.
Okay, I guess we want to get to this, but yes, generally, pre-trial, the list of witnesses is prepared, but as you can see, there are often the case that a witness will be added during the trial, but it
can't be no surprise to either side.
Well, and it could be,
but they come up with an additional witness that the one side then has to tell the other side.
Oh, well, of course.
Defense.
Yes, but they might. This is true, but they may. It may be very short notice, so to speak.
Yeah,
it's right in the middle of the trial.
We saw that, yeah. Okay. A surprise witness, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. There you have it.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And then, of course, as I said, we had this very beautiful drash at the beginning, in the first part of this Mishnah, wherein he says that, you know, if the Torah punishes somebody who associates himself with Obri Avera, in other words, people who are transgressors, so much more so then will the Torah reward a person who associates himself with those who do good. All right, on the top of love, where at this point Rabbi Yossi disagrees with what was just said at the bottom before, where it said, at the bottom before, remember, it said that the mashnayim nimsa echad mehem korv apostle, right? That if you have two witnesses, and one of them we discover is either a relative or is invalid, you know, for moral reasons, whatever it may be, you know, to testify, so edu son betela, then in that case we say that their testimony is to be thrown out, it's invalid. So avshloisha, we said, right? So 3-2. And then they added the Menayin Apilumeya, and how do we know that if so it's 100 sets of witnesses, so it still is Talmud Leimar Edom, because the repetition of the word Edom teaches that you have to treat all of them as if they were one great big unit. So Omar Rabbi Yossi at this point makes a distinction. This he agrees with what has just been said. He says, Bamed Devar Bamurim, he says, where do we say that, you know, if one is disqualified, then automatically 3, 4, 5, 6, etc., you know, are going to be disqualified? He says, b'dinei nefoshes. This is true in capital cases. Whereas we said, as Rashi points out at the top of the page over there, b'dinei nefoshes, so he says, Torah says over there, v'hitzilu ha'edo, right? which means that the congregation, the community, is to try to save a person who is being threatened with a death penalty. Therefore, we have to look always to try to find merit on behalf of the person, you know, who committed the crime. Okay, but when it comes, however, to monetary laws, monetary dinim, you know, monetary matters, in that case, this kaimhoid is bishar. Rabbi Yossi says that the testimony should be valid with the other remaining witnesses. This is what he says. Okay, so this is Rabbi Yossi's opinion. However, at this particular point, Rabbi, who of course is Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, he objects and he says, look, the Mishnah says echod dinim mominos v'echod dinim nefoshes, right? That the same rule that applies to capital cases applies equally to monetary matters. So you cannot say that, okay, in monetary matters we will accept, but not in the, you know, not the other one, as Rabbi Yossi had proposed. So, however, now there's a new qualification put in. It says we ate Mosai. Under what circumstances is this so? He says, Bizman she hisru bahen. This applies when the witnesses gave warning to the person who was committing the crime that he should not commit the crime, and, you know, he should, right, and that the punishment for the crime would be, you know, let's say the death penalty if he persists in the murder and so on. Avol bizman she lo hisru bahen. But let's say they did not. What should two brothers do? Sheroo biyechod. They saw a certain man, Shehorag as a nefesh, who committed murder. Are we to say, therefore, that, you know, what are they supposed to do? And the Mishnah doesn't answer this, but of course the Gemara is going to try to find, you know, what they should have done.
Brothers, what witnessed the murder?
They witnessed the murder, right. And question is, did they warn the murderer or did they not? But as you can see, that's only half of the story. The other story is, if two brothers are doing it, we just said that what? That if witnesses are related to each other, then the testimony is no good.
Maybe they didn't have time to warn him.
Well, so for this we're going to have to see what happens.
I think it's even whether he's warned or not.
Two brothers,
right,
so
right.
Invalidates their testimony.
Extend that to the wife and the husband.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The wife is not allowed.
No, that's right.
For the wife,
it's Oh, yeah, first of all, we have a statement, right? Written in the laws of Yom Kippur, if you remember.
Oh, it's written at the
Kohen Gadol. It's written in the Kippur Badu Badesa, right? That he has to affect the Kohen for himself and for his household. And so the Mishnah says, what is Beso? Beso is the Ishta. In other words, his wife. So that we consider a husband and wife as being good echad, as though they were one body, and that's it. So obviously, one part of the body can't testify against the other part of the body, okay? They're one. That's all there is to it.
Can't testify against
the wife. Right. Husband cannot testify against the wife, or wife cannot testify against the husband. That's the way it is. And of course, on the basis of korot, it means also that you cannot testify against children. Children cannot testify against their parents, and so on and so forth. Obviously, these are all prohibited. You cannot do. All right. Now, just to finish up what the Rashi said over there, he says echad dinim mominos, to say on the top line over there. In other words, the same rule with the plane, nami. Likewise, that they do some detail. That you know, if you had an invalid witness, then automatically it throws out the entire testimony, even in monetary matters. This is what you know, what Rabbi Yehuda Anasi says. But they said then, Emosai, when it says Bizbashi Hisru Bahem, Uvedinin the Foshes, he says that when it comes to capital cases, Ki Abinin, Batelo or Batlo. Bizman Shakova apostle Nishtate Pedus Yitzchilo, right? Leos bin Amastrin, the Yoviadin. He's making now a qualification to say, this is how Rashi understands the text, that in capital cases, when we say
that a witness has to testify, his testimony has to be where he not only gave warning, right? You know, we're talking about this Banshah Korba Pasul Nishtatek, right, where a person who is related or who is invalid also was joined in the testimony right from the very beginning. In other words, he was one of the group who saw what was going on, and you know, he was among those who gave warning to the you know, to the transgressor that he shouldn't continue with what he is doing. Aval im lo hisubahen velo kibnu yoseidim adobar. But, says Rashi, if they did not give the warning, nor did they intend, they didn't have the kavana, lo kivdu, right? They did not have the intention of being witnesses, Badover. In other words, all that they did is they saw something going on, but they neither gave warning, nor did they expect that they were going to be called upon to testify. Then, lo botla edus achirim. Then, the testimony of others who were there is not going to be declared, you know, invalid because of the fact that these people are related to each other. Okay? Because of the fact that these people, in other words, you know, the two brothers are. The Maya Sushde Achim. Because what can two brothers do? Shavro'u im Shlishi min Hashuk, that they saw it together with somebody else whom, you know, is not related to them. The Echot Shehor Gasadabi. So now we go to the Gemara. Right. I'm just wondering whether we should go over the Tosfos over here too. All right. Let's take a look. Rashi is
setting up an example. The two brothers are joined in the third person.
Right.
So somehow you can.
Yeah, well, the Mishnah itself, all right, the Mishnah itself is going to speak about it, because the Mishnah said, Mayasu Shteyachim Shero, right?
Yeah.
What are we going to say? We're going to throw out the testimony because of the two brothers? So, Rashi is giving an explanation based upon how the Gemara is going to try to get out of the situation. Namely, that if all that they did was just that they were spectators, but they didn't do anything, then in that particular case, then they don't have to be called upon to testify, and therefore, if others were around to testify, the case could be established on the basis of others, but not of them. On the other hand, what would happen if they saw it and they decided that they wanted to testify? So even if you had others who were there, then automatically the case would have to be thrown out on the basis that the entire testimony is bottled because they themselves were either related or they were invalid. Yeah.
What if the two witnesses were one of the brothers and a stranger?
That is a possibility.
That would be valid?
That is a possibility, I said.
Possibility.
It's a possibility. It all depends what exactly took place in that moment, okay? This is why they're stressing the idea that if it was mitchila, right from the very beginning, both of them were involved, and in that case it's one thing. But if from the very beginning both of them were not involved, then it might be a different story. Okay? That's exactly how they're going to try to find a justification over there. All right. All right. Tosfos, if you can take a look, we'll take a look a little bit at Tosfos tonight, because the reasoning behind all this and the discussion is very, very interesting and enlightening to us. Omer Rabbi Yossi, he starts in by quoting the Mishnah and how Rashi understood it, right? He says, Bamed Devar Mamurim, he says, Bedin Nefashis, right? The Rabbi Yossi says that this is a reference only to Din Nefashis, where if one is possible or Korov, then it would throw out the entire testimony. So it says Perish HaKuntris, in other words, Rashi explained that Mishum Detziv, because the Pasuk says V'Yitzilu Ho'eda, right? That the Torah says that the congregation is to save. And that means the mitzvah Revatel Ho'edus Bekal Kedei La'asil Nefesh. Which implies, says Rashi, that it is a mitzvah to make the testimony null and void easily in order to save a life, you know, to save somebody from the execution. So he says, "V'koshel fei v'shol." But this is difficult to accept Rashi's explanation. Says Tosfos, the imkain, because of this case, dinei momenos that benayhu. Then we should learn dinei momenos also from this. The rock sieve, because the pasuk says mishpat echodi yelochem. You have to have only one standard of justice. Okay. The yod, and in addition, the dinei momenos. Even in dinei momenos and monetary matters, nomek siv, we find that the Torah also uses the expression al pi shnayim or al pi shlosha. It's not just the idea of two or three, which is confined to capital cases, but it's mentioned even in the dinei momenos. Benakish gimel leveis, and we learn that we have to compare three witnesses to two witnesses, as we've already explained from the Mishnah, right? That if one of them is a karav of a puzzle, then automatically throws out the whole thing, right? So lechach perish ri, therefore along came ri. Ri is one of the Bali Tosfos. He's always coming up with some good explanations. The v'dinei nefoshos shayach shapir lemeila. That when it comes to capital cases, there in reality it is more appropriate to learn Mishnayim, that, you know, from the word two, that they do some betela, that the testimony would be bottled. Mishum demashnayim kininsa echod behem korve fasul, because just as in the case if you only had two people who were witnessing, and one of them is discovered to be a korov, right, relative, or is invalid, then they do some betela the gamri. Then their testimony is immediately, completely thrown out of the window. Okay? Umeyato. Now, einum awelis lechlum. And from this point on, then it's no good for anything, right? In other words, the testimony has no validity, whatever. Okay, so hilkach. So, that's the case. Then in that case, we could say that if you have three witnesses, the same thing. The entire testimony is considered invalid. Avol b'dinei mamonos, but when it comes to dinei mamonos, divishnayim name kininzach nehem korvet pasul, that where you had only two witnesses and one of them is discovered to be a korv or a pasul, then hasheni einu botel legamrei. The second one is not completely disqualified. Why? Because here we have a different din that goes into operation. What is the din? He says the chayav lo shavua, because he is obligated to give a shavua. Now this right now in Gemara that is being studied in the Daf Yomi happens to be shavuas, okay, which deals primarily with oaths, and you have to give an oath and things like that. So it has other things too, but primarily this is going to be the subject matter. The Gemara shavuas, they speak about the fact, it's also alluded to in some of the Bavas as well, that what happens if a defendant, you know, has two witnesses, okay? One of them is declared to be a karav or a pasul. Then in that particular case, the din is that the defendant has to take a shvua, has to take an oath. So, what do we see? If the Torah, the way our sages interpret the Torah, they say that he's chayav shvua, then it means that if there's only one witness, then in that case, one witness, the testimony would require the defendant to take an oath. But what does it show? It shows that if we say that with one witness he would be required to take an oath, it would show, though, that the testimony of one witness has a certain amount of validity, you see. So that this is one of the point that the Re is bringing over here. Contrary to what we've said over here, where, you know, we've been saying a gusum betela the gabri, right? That we throw out the entire testimony and have no validity, whatever. So we see that there is a case mentioned in the Gemara where one witness can have a certain validity in that, while we don't accept completely his testimony, but it's enough already to cause us to ask the defendant to take an oath that the testimony is either correct or incorrect.
Would they be under oath anyway?
No. Not necessarily. There are certain specified cases where an oath has to be taken. Yes. But not in every case, okay?
I understand.
Yes.
Two witnesses in Harshad are necessary to convict, to accuse and convict. But is it also the case that two witnesses are necessary to prove a point for defense? That's so often.
Sure. Sure, absolutely. Unless the judges can find a reason, you know, when they go over the testimony and everything else, and they try to apply, you know, the reasoning, try to find causes and so on, so then that becomes the judge's decision. But remember that, you know, the Sanhedrin that is trying this has to consist of how many judges? 23. This is Sanhedrin of 23 judges. And, you know, the 23, they have to think about it and so on. And if it's dinei nefashos, and in that case, they're not even allowed to settle the case the same day, even if they were in 100% agreement. They can't do that. They have to let it stay over for the following day, and they have to think about it and try to come up with reasons, you know, for springing the person and so on and so forth, you know.
Well, all 23
right.
Judges have to be unanimous, but that's
no.
Unanimous.
No. But you have to have at least a majority of at least two. In other words, that's the reason why we say that Ein Bez and Shokol, that you're not allowed to have a just an equal number of judges in the court. That's why it has to be 23. But even if there were, let's say, 12 for conviction, and 11, you know, for springing him, that's not enough to convict him, because there has to be at least two who will be in agreement. So that, you see, it doesn't go on the basis of a simple majority.
What do you mean by two?
They say two, all right. In other words, if it were the other way around, if 12 said free him and 11 said, you know, he deserves a death penalty, then they would free him. You understand? But if it's the other way around, where, you know, 12 say they're there for conviction and 11 are not, that's, you don't go on the basis of the
so
simple
you have
majority
to have
in that case.
Let's say 13 and 10.
Right, right.
You're saying.
That would be.
Win
right.
By 2 points.
Right. Unless, of course, one person simply disqualified himself as a judge, says, hey, I don't know, I can't make up my mind which way to go, so we're going to dismiss the entire Sanhedrin. The answer is no. If we can come up with a majority of two, then that would still be considered valid. Okay? But, as you can see, the Hitzilo Ha'edah happens to be a very important concept in this. But since we're talking now about monetary matters, so we see that there is a monetary matter where it works out that there is some validity to a single witness, and that the defendant then would be Chayav Shvua. Okay?
But does it still hold true that for capital matters, that you have to have at least two witnesses, though?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but no Shvua. Shvua is only in monetary matters.
That is right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking about the fact, you know, that people put their hand on the Bible and they say, you know, swear to tell the whole truth, etc., 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 you know. The way we see it always, you know.
No.
But this is not the way it works.
Shvua is more like a
Shvua is a very, very solemn thing. In order to... a person who takes an oath is supposed to be in fear of the fact that if he's
transgresses the oath,
right, if he's swearing falsely, the Beit Shalom is going to take care of him and punish him for that.
The oath,
okay?
The single witness or the defendant?
No, the defendant.
For what purpose?
Because the single witness has come and says that the creditor was right, that he did lend money, okay, and this guy has not paid back the money. You understand?
Sure.
Now, you cannot accept the testimony of a single witness on that case. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
Sure I do.
Right. In other words, if they came, two witnesses came to the Beis Din. All right, now hold it.
Okay.
Two witnesses came to the Beis Din, okay?
Right.
And they said, look, we know that Reuven lent money to Shimon and Shimon didn't pay. Because, you know, we can testify.
We were there.
Okay. All right. So, in that particular case, the court would naturally decide, you know, that Reuven should get his money back from Shimon, right? Okay. Because there are witnesses. Okay, but what happens if there's only one witness? So the best that we can do is to say to Shimon, look, we don't have two witnesses who will corroborate, you know, what Reuben is saying, but nevertheless, there may be something in what his claim is. So if you want to, you know, to dispute the claim, then you must take an oath that you did repay the money. You understand?
Wait a second, you've all seen clearly. The witness now is for the creditor.
Correct.
The single witness comes in and testifies that the creditor is correct, Reuben. Okay, so now the Beit Din turns to Shimon, the defendant, and says, you're allowed to testify for yourself and take an oath.
You have to take an oath, right. If you claim that, you know, that you paid him, then you must take an oath in order to affirm that fact, okay?
I understand.
Was a criticism of Dino, do you think?
Pardon me?
See, the criticism of it should be sufficient. That be a valid criticism of the parents of the Greek. Because what he's saying, it's a very hard thing to understand this parents.
Yeah.
He's saying, in Dine Nefashis, if you have two agents, and one of them were to become possible, but you didn't have this principle of invalidating the entire...
No, but in the process, we do say it's wholesale invalidation.
Right, okay. But he's saying, therefore, but the reason there were two aid and one of them would become possible, then the entire testimony would fall anyway. Because one aid, independent of the fact that invalidating any part invalidates the entire testimony.
Correct.
Losing one aid,
right.
Therefore we extend it to even three. So by Mominus, on the other hand, if one aid were somehow to become invalidated without invalidating the whole testimony, you'd still have one aid to be Machayev Shua. Therefore, if you have three aidim, you would now accept their testimony completely. It should be sufficient that they would oblige Shua.
I've lost you at the end.
Well, you're trying to extend from two to three, where if there were two and one dropped out, you'd have a Shua.
That is
therefore,
correct,
with
right.
three, one drops out. Don't invalidate the whole testimony.
I understand
the
what you're saying. Right.
It should be Dayo. You should say Dayo.
Right.
And make it a Shua.
Right. Right.
Right. You see what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. Right. The question is, you know. Yeah, I understand. It's a good question that you're asking. Yeah. He's right. What Mike is saying is, look, we consider the testimony as being a unit. Right. This is the point that we've been making all night.
Right.
It's a unit. All right. So if we say in the unit, you know, that if one is no good, then it invalidates the entire thing, right? Then in that case, it shouldn't make a difference, Mike says, between whether there are only two witnesses, whereas we already said, one, if one is proven to be a Korah or apostle, but in Dine Mominos, there is a possibility that maybe the validity extends to the fact that, you know, the defendant would take a Shvua in order to be free, let's say, from having to pay, right? And therefore, he says that the same thing should apply, even if there were three witnesses and one proved to be Kar of Apostle, that even though there are two who are still left, but nevertheless, he should still take a Shua instead of because we cannot consider this, you know, as an independent, right, as being an independent testimony of two valid witnesses. Yeah.
Something doesn't fit.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the reasons why, as we'll see, there is this machlekes. Rabbi doesn't accept this idea. Rabbi doesn't accept it. Okay? It's Rabbi Yossi who's proposing it, but Rabbi doesn't accept it. Take a look at the Mishnah again on top of that. Right? He said, I'm a Rabbi Yossi, right? He says, I'm a Rabbi Yossi, he says, we did it in the first no, but in the moment, it's right, it's kind of this bishop,
right?
This is what he's saying, that the other witnesses would be enough in order to establish it. So, in other words, in reference to your question, if we had three, and one is proven to be a Korah or apostle, then in that particular case, forget about the business of the Shua, because we still have two valid witnesses who are left. Okay? But Rabbi Omer, Rabbi disputes that. He says, Echod Dini Momen is certainly the Poshis. Namely, that obviously it means that even in Dini Momenos, as Rashi said, right, the testimony is no good. If one of them is proven to be, you know, a Korah or apostle. Okay.
So then this is where the Mishnah comes in about, again, the business about Hasra. Did the witnesses warn or not? And that will see us for today. All right? So let's go on with the Gemara right now. Omar Rava. All right, Rava goes back to the very first part of the Mishnah, where it says that, you know, two witnesses, three witnesses, even 100 witnesses, he says, right? So Rava says, look, that's if the witnesses all testify practically simultaneously. So Omalei Rav Acha b'Difti l'Ravina. So Rav Acha b'Difti said to Ravina, he says, Nichti, let's take a look. What do we mean, right? Toch kedei dibur hechidomi. How do you define this toch kedei dibur, which means literally while you're still saying something, okay? So he says kedei sheilas talmid l'rav. All right, it's the amount of time that it would take for the talmid to say to his teacher, Shalom alecha Rabbi Abori. In other words, how many words is that? Shalom Alecha Rabbi Abori.
Four
words. If he only said Shalom Alecha Rabbi, that's somebody machlokes. Because that would only be three. But all right, let's be generous and say the amount of time it takes to say four words. And that's Toch Kedei Dibur. That's the official explanation. By the way, it has many implications. But I'll come back to the other implications in a moment. He says, so, but anyway, at this particular point, Rav Acha is saying, look, Meya Tuvahava, 100, that's a lot. How could you get, 100 witnesses all to testify within the space of the amount of time that you can say four words? You understand? So, Amalei, so Rabbeinu answered him, well, it says, Kol Chad V'chad B'Sokadeit B'Ushal Chaveiro. Each one is testifying as soon as one is finishing, the next one is already testified, the next one after that, and so on and so forth, so that there's no space practically in between. Alright. I said that this idea of Toch Kedei Dibur has implications other than simply in this particular case. Very important. Very important in davening, I'll be honest with you. After all, we know that there are times, you know, in the davening that we have to make changes for one thing or another. Right? As for example, you start in, and you forget the beginning after that when it's the time to say Bashi Baruch Hu Me'ilah Goshen, okay, and you forget to say it. So the ruling is if it is Toch Kedei Dibur, immediately as soon as you say Oi Chalke Oi, you go right, you say it over, you know, you say Ato Gibor and so on, and so you don't have to go right to the beginning of the Shemoneh Esrei, as we learned in Brachos, you have to do if it's already after Toch Kedei Dibur. You know, if only afterwards you remember, then you got to go back to the beginning and daven the Shemoneh Esrei all over again. Okay, and the same thing would apply to such things as, for example, let's say you're making a bracha and you ended the bracha with the wrong ending, and you realize immediately. So if it is immediately, then in that case it's Toch Kedei Dibur, then just supply the ending, the right ending, and that's it, okay? But what if you forgot about it? Then in that case you have to do your bracha over again or something, because the first one was invalid, it didn't count, or something like that. So this is an important principle that we always have about Toch Kedei Dibur, that if you remember immediately, within within the shortest amount of time that's possible, then in that particular case, okay? It should probably also apply, I would say, also, if you make a bracha, then you should go immediately from the bracha to the food that you're eating. I mean, let's say you're making hamotzi. Don't hang around and wait or something like that, but then, immediately you take the piece of bread in your mouth or something like that. Or if you make, say, bari priya weights, so don't wait around, until you get around to eating a piece of fruit. It should be Toch Kedei Dibur within the same time. Okay. All right. Rabbi Akiva, Omer, Loibosh, Lishi, etc., etc. Going back to the Mishnah, they remember that Rabbi Akiva says that, first of all, don't think that the reason why the Torah says Shlosha is in order to make it easier for the witnesses. On the contrary, it makes it tougher for the witnesses. In what way? That if we disqualify one of the witnesses, then we disqualify all of them. Right? This is what he said. Okay, so Mashtams and so Omalei Rav Popila Abaye. So Rav Popila said to Abaye, he says, Elamiyato. He says, if this is the case, then Horug Yatzil. Then the person who is murdered, he says, he should save the murderer from being put to death. Why? This is real trick, you know, with the finger. Okay? Because the idea being that the murderer is also, he's a Karev. Who is he a Karev to? He's a Karev to himself.
Oh.
Okay? So since he is related to himself, then in that case, even though he was murdered, then in that particular case, because he is related, so that therefore the murderer is going to go free. I don't have to tell you that it isn't always a practical question, but they like to ask questions in order to try to stimulate your mind a little bit about these things.
I don't quite understand that.
Okay. All right. Let's take a look at
the accused is related to the defendant.
In witness, witnessing, a witness is not allowed to be related to either of the parties.
Okay.
Understand?
I understand.
Can't be related to either of the parties. So if that's the case, the Horeg is related to himself.
The point he's trying to make is that
right.
The addition, when you have a valid set of witnesses, the fallacy he's trying to illustrate is the addition of a witness who wasn't necessary will now destroy the integrity of the preceding witnesses.
Right.
And if so, extend the fallacy and say that the presence of the victim himself
will also do.
So he's highlighting the fallacy of invalidating the testimony, making it theater of the absurd.
Right.
Well, except I don't quite understand why the Nefrag is related to himself, and you can't say that about all the witnesses. Why does he bring the point that someone is related to himself to explain what it is?
Well, we said, didn't we say before that, you know, Nimsa Echon Ehem, Korav Apostle, right?
Right,
Then they do some Batela, and that applies to two or three, it makes no difference.
Right. So he's related to himself,
As I said before, that you can have witnesses for the accused and witnesses for the defense, all right? So if he's witnessing for himself, that the Horug, the person is already murdered, then in that particular case, it would mean that the murderer automatically is going to go free because the witness against him, the Horug, cannot testify against him. You understand? It's, as I said, it's a real break, you know. It's a real break.
There are no valid witnesses. I mean, what's the difference between the victim and any other person?
Yeah, well, this is why it's going to be thrown out. It's going to be thrown out. It's no question. Right. It's another thing. Right. Right.
He chickens out. He doesn't want to take the argument to the fullest.
Right, right. Because, again, I mean, you know, among the disqualifications is that you cannot be a sone to the person against whom you are testifying. You cannot be an enemy of that person.
That makes more sense.
Because then, you know, we feel that.
prejudice,
exactly.
Bias.
Right. There are all kinds of disqualifications, you see, and that happens to be one of them. Rashi on that point over here. All right, let's do the Rashi beginning with where it says Gemara Deva. Who sheidu kulam besoke de diva, right? It says Hosim Kam Rav Masnisa. Says there the Torah, the Mishnah mentions Meyo Kishtaim, right? That 100 witnesses are like 2 witnesses. Avolim heyudu ashnayim. But let's say that 2 witnesses came and they gave testimony. Ula achar zman. And then after some time had passed, heyudu ha'achirim, the others gave testimony. Then in that case, we no longer consider them as being one witness. You understand? As being a unit of witnessing. Arayin kishtei kitos the holdover. Then in that case, they become like 2 separate groups for everything. Now, what does it mean for everything? In other words, let's say if we were to punish one, then the other one would be not punished because they didn't give the testimony at the same time. You understand? They came at a different time. Of course, I mean, I don't have to tell you, we've had previous cases where it seemed to be just the opposite. But this is, you know, what the Mishnah is now saying over here. V'chol echod v'yechod, and, you know, so he tries, you know, to explain that each one came, Hiskila Hoyd began witnessing B'sof K'day Dibo Shetziyu B'Shalavio, within the short amount of time after the other one had given testimony, so then they began their testimony. They didn't wait. Okay. All right. Now, Horeg Yatzo. This is how Rashi tries to explain it. He says, L'Rabbi Yossi. This is in accordance with Rabbi Yossi's opinion, which, of course, as we said, was disputed by Rebbe. Okay? The Omar who said, Af below Hisro, even if the witnesses did not warn, they didn't give warning, you know, to the murderer, Shalon is Kavein Lohoid, in that, you know, he did not intend to be a witness, then Hu Matzil es Hanodon Mipnei Korva, Horok, Mipnei Korva. So he's going to save from execution the person who is being judged because of the fact that he has a relationship to him. So Horog Name Yatzil es Hanodon. Then in that case, the person who is murdered also is going to save the person who is being judged from execution. Sheharei, why? Gamhu ra'o, he also saw, he saw that the murderer was coming after him, right? Behu koro ve'tzalatzmo, and he's naturally, he's related to himself. And of course we have, you know, they did about koro, you know, that a person cannot testify if he's koro ve'tzalatzmo. You're not allowed to testify against yourself in Dinim Dekoshes. You realize that. Cannot. Okay? So that the Fifth Amendment is no chiddush as far as the Gemara is concerned. They were Fifth Amending it a long time ago. Okay? All right. So the Gemara comes up with a very ingenious answer. Under what circumstances do we say that the Horeg is not going to save the guy from execution? After all we said before, after he saw the guy coming, right? So he says, this would be Kisha Harogo Be'acharav, that the guy killed him while he had his back turned to him. Because then we could say he didn't see what was coming, and so therefore, under these circumstances, the murderer could be convicted of the death penalty. I don't have to tell you again, this is arguing it up in golden finger, as we'll say. Okay? So now they give a similar case. They say, nearby Yatzil. So if that's the case, then the same thing should be true if a person, let's say, two men had homosexual relations. Okay? Now, one of them is always the Robea. In other words, he does the action. And the other one is the nearby, the one who's the recipient of the action. I don't have to go into further details, I guess. Okay. So he says that the nearby should save the Robea, right? Why? Because he is the same way. He's related to himself, yes? So, therefore, they come up with the ingenious solution, Kisharavo Macharav, that when he did it with his back turned.
Sodomize him.
Right. Sodomize him with his back turned. Okay. So, in that case, what do we find? Find Horeg Yatzilu. Then in that case, we come up with a conclusion that the murderer, right, and the person who commits the pederasty, right, that they should be able to save themselves from the death penalty, right? So ishtik. So he was silent. He didn't have an answer for him. So kiyosu lekami the rova. So then, when he came before, this is Rapapa. Remember, first Rapapa asked this question to Abaye, so now he comes to Rava. You know, Abaye and Rava, they're always the two great lights of their own generation. So if it didn't work with Abaye, so he went to the Rabbah. Maybe Rabbah has a better explanation. So Kiyosu Lekami the Rabbah, he says, Abalei. So he says, wait a minute, he says to him. What does the Torah say? It says, Yokum Dover. It says, Apishtai Medim, or Shloshahidim Yokum Dover, right? According to three witnesses, or two witnesses, or three witnesses, can some matter be established? Okay, Yokum Dover. So it means, Bimekai Med Dover, Akosim Adaber. We're talking about people who will affect, you know, they can affect by their testimony what it is. But we're not talking about people, you know, like the Roveya and the Horeg, you know, who cannot affect, you know, the judgment. Okay? Okay. Rashi, Yochum Dover, he says, Kasir Bahaikra, it's written in the same pasuk that Sha'ason Lechulam Kishnayim, you know, where we say that all the witnesses are compared and they are like two witnesses, the Ainu Edim, right? In other words, we're talking about the witnesses. But we're not talking about those who actually committed the actual offense itself. For them, we cannot say that the Roveya or the Horeg, that their testimony is such that it's going to throw out the case against them. It doesn't work, because these are the guys who did it, and they have nothing to do with witnessing. Okay. Omer Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says, Bamor Devar Mamurim, he says, right? He says, what are we talking about? So, of course, we said, you know, Bedini Nefoshos, etc., etc. And then afterwards, it says over there, the Mosai, Bisman Shehisubahen, Abo Bisman Shehisubahen, then Mayasu Shtei Achen, right? What are we going to do with two brothers? Shero Bi Echot, Shehoragas Hanefesh. So this is what they're going to discuss right now. Omar Rabbi Yosef, etc., what should we say to them? So Omar Robo, so Robo says, Hachi Amin Luhu. This is what we have to say to, let's say, two brothers who have come to the best, okay? Or actually, what should we say to the two brothers who were there witnessing what was going on, okay? He says, we have to say to them, Lemechzei Asisim, did you come only as spectators in order, you know, you're only telling me that you saw something, but you're not coming in order to testify? O Las Hudei Asisim, or have you come in order to testify? So, I Amri Las Hudei also. If they say that they have come in order to give testimony, then in that particular case, Nimsa Echad Mehen Karve Apostle, if we find that one of the witnesses is a Karve Apostle, then it is some Betela, then their testimony is thrown out. But, I Amre, if these people say, Lemetze also, we only came, you know, to see what was going on, then in that case, Mayasu Shtei Achen Shoro Be'echad Shoro Sanefesh, right? Then what are two people, what are two brothers supposed to do? I mean, they should try to save, obviously, the murdered person if they possibly can from the murderer. You can't ask them, you know, just to step aside. But it's a different story if you're asking them to come and to give testimony. If you ask them to give testimony, then in that case, two brothers cannot testify. All right, we have one more line. We'll finish it and then we'll call it a night, okay? So, Itmar, we have learned, the Rav Yehuda, Mar Shmuel. We have learned that there's a machlokes as to who is the halacha follow. Shmuel said that halacha to Rabbi Yossi. Shmuel says that the halacha follows Rabbi Yossi. Namely, that what? That the law of that all the witnesses have to be in agreement and none of them can be Karev Apostle, that applies only to Dinei Nefashos, right? But according to Rabbi Yossi, in the case of Dinei Momonos, there is a possibility that you know, we would accept the testimony of those who were not either the Kravim of Psalm. Okay? So this is what Rav Yehuda said. Rav Nachman disagrees with me. He says, Rav Nachman, halacha ki Rebbe. He says, on the contrary, the halacha follows Rebbe, who says, Echad dinei mamonos, Echad dinei nefoshos, makes no difference. Either it's all or it's nothing. So,
alright.
Yeah. So, Mirtz Hashem, we shall meet next week again. We'll continue, and we'll be on the next side of the page, right? On Amud Beis. So as you can see, we're getting pretty close to the end of the first chapter of Makos. Another couple of weeks or so, Mirtz Hashem, we'll be able to complete it. Let's see. Now, tonight is, let's see, today is the 6th, right? Or the 7th?
Today is the 6th.
6th, thank you. Believe me, I've lost track of time myself. Right, September 6th. So we'll meet on the 13th, we'll meet on the 20th, right? When is Rosh Hashanah again? Tonight is September 13th. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Merci beaucoup. And we are starting right now the Mishnah on the top of Daf Vav, Amud Beis. And Irv, we miss you. Okay, the Mishnah begins by talking now about Hoyushnaim Roen Oso Michalonze, Ushnaim Roen Oso Michalonze. Alright. Here is the new situation. Situation is where you have two people who are in a house and out of the window they see that a murder is taking place. So two people see him out of this window, and two people see him from an opposite window, right? From a different window. Okay? So obviously the question is, can their testimony be considered as one? So we're going to see that not necessarily. So situation number one that we have right now is that in addition to this, there's another man right in between. V'echod masri bo b'emza, right? There's a man who sees what's going on and he's warning the murderer, desist. So now what is the din? Din is Bisman Shemiksasan Rowan Elu Eselu, when some of the witnesses, let's say looking out of this window, can see some of the witnesses in the other window, then Hare Elu Edu Sachas, then this is considered as if it is one testimony, right? The Yim Lav, but if not, in other words, if they can't see each other, I mean, the windows, let's say maybe there's this window and this window, right? Instead of this window and that window.
We're saying they did see each other or they could see each other?
No. It says that if they can, if some of the witnesses can see some of the witnesses over there.
If they can or if they do?
If they can.
Okay.
It says Yicholin, okay? Okay. It doesn't say Yicholin, but I mean, this is the implication, all right? Okay. In other words, if, you know, let's say, as I say, here, okay, here is where the murder is taking place. Now, if here is a window, and here is a window, let's say, okay, so some of the witnesses here can see some of the witnesses over there, then in that particular case, we say that the testimony can be considered as one witness, okay? Edus achas, okay? Okay. V'yim lav, but if not, then the Mishnah says, Hare elu shtei deidiyos, then they count as two different sets of witnesses, and therefore it has a practical consequence. L'fichoch, it says, therefore, if nimtzeis achas mehen zom emes, if one of these sets of witnesses is proven to be zomim, you know, that they falsify the testimony, then in that case, Uvehein Neherogin Vashnia Petura. It's an interesting resolution. It says he, meaning whom? The answer is the murderer can be put to death, but also the Adam Zomimin can be put to death. However, the second group, who as we said had no connection with the other one, just that they came and they testified, so in that case they are potter, they are free. Of course, that brings, you know, all kinds of problems because of the fact, I mean, why are they free? If we said that they are like Edus Achas, then in that case they're testifying to the same thing, right? Therefore, they should get the same punishment. But nevertheless, we see that the Mishnah says that unless they can be joined